Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I have a very special guest, Donna Anderson from lovefraud.com. And rather than take phone calls, if you do have any questions you would like to address with Donna, please email them to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. I just wanted to make a couple of brief announcements before we introduce Donna. And the first announcement, I want to remind people that our healing weekend for September 28th and 29th is really moving along with people coming in from all over the country and even outside the country. So I'm really excited about how dynamic this is going to be. We have some of our women who were in Texas who are coming, and women from all parts of the country. And some people are coming back. Some people are coming for the first time. But regardless, healing is always possible when you do it in numbers. So finding the support that you need is really the key to going on that road to healing. Just want to remind you that Monday nights is our UK-Europe chat. And if you'd like to be part of that, write to me at bonkay@aol.com. And also Wednesday nights is our support chat for adult children who come from these marriages and who need our support, and they need the support of each other. So if you have children 18 and over who would like to join our very special group, please let me know about that as well. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my very special guest, Donna Anderson. And Donna, thank you so much for returning to our show.
Oh, Bonnie, I'm so glad to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you, Donna. I mean, we are very big fans of yours. And in our support chats that we have three times a week, women are always, you know, talking about how important the newsletters that you send out are, that you're so generous with sending out all this information on a regular basis that I disseminate to them. And a number of our women, you know, are talking about your books and different kinds of videos that they've watched with you in there and television shows. And thankfully, there's somebody like you out there who can talk about people who are sociopaths, and of course that doesn't apply to everybody in our group, but it does apply to a number of women who not only may be involved in sociopathic relationships now, but many times when they get out of a relationship, if they haven't built themselves up, I always tell them that they're very vulnerable and easy prey for someone who could be a sociopath. So maybe you could tell people a little bit about your story to start with.
Well, I got into this because I found myself married to a sociopath, and I didn't know what it was at the time, but this man took $250,000 from me. He cheated with 6 different women during our 2.5-year relationship. He had a child with one of those women, and then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. Yes, this behavior made absolutely no sense to me until I realized that he was a sociopath. And I also kind of fit into the category that all your women fit in, because I learned after my marriage, when going through all the documents that my ex had, or soon-to-be ex, had left in my basement, I found correspondence indicating that about 2 months after he proposed to me, he was also soliciting a gay male prostitute.
Well, that's really interesting, because I didn't know that part.
Oh, yes, yes. I think early on, like about a week after I met him, he proclaimed to me in the course of a conversation, we were talking about AIDS because, you know, we were getting that part in the relationship where it looked like it might become physical. And so I asked him, I said, have you ever had an AIDS test? And he said, well, he kind of lied about that too, because he claimed to be in the military and said he always had these physicals because of the military, and because of that his blood was tested and he was sure he was not positive for AIDS. Of course, he never was in the military, but I didn't know that at the time. And
yeah.
Then what he said immediately following that comment is that I don't have a gay bone in my body. And this is what he told me. And then later on, it turned out that, yeah, he was soliciting a gay male prostitute. And after I left him and was going through all these computer disks, because he was online constantly looking for a new hookup, I found more indication that he was advertising for men. He was looking for men. So, you know, this kind of leads to my theory about a lot of sociopaths, is that essentially they'll have sex with anybody who suits their purpose. Or their agenda, or anyone that they think they can manipulate, because they know that sex will help somebody, it will help them to manipulate people.
And I think that maybe you could give a little definition for people about a sociopath.
I consider a sociopath to be a social predator. These people live their lives by exploiting others. And a lot of people tend to think that a sociopath is a serial killer or just a criminal. And it's important to understand that sociopaths are not always criminal in the sense that they've been arrested and convicted. I mean, they're often doing things that are illegal or certainly unethical and immoral, but it doesn't always rise to the point where, you know, they're violating the law. I mean, a lot of sociopaths are really smart in that they can go right up to the edge but not cross the line into something that would get them arrested. But these people are exploitative. They're the people who defraud their credit card companies. They abuse their spouses. They neglect their kids. They steal from their employers. They bully their coworkers. So there's any kind of a whole range of exploitative behaviors that they engage in.
Now, do they prey on a certain kind of person? Is that who they're looking for?
Not necessarily. For a sociopath, anybody is a potential target. It depends what their agenda is at the moment or what they're looking for. Like, I often hear from people who were involved with sociopaths, and they didn't take any money from them because, you know, a lot of sociopaths are con artists, or con artists are sociopaths. But people will say to me that, well, this person didn't take any money from me, so I guess he's not a sociopath. And that's not necessarily true, because I know of many cases in which people were involved with exploiters, but they weren't exploiting money. Some sociopaths are looking for a place to live. Some are looking for to take advantage of your business connections. They're often looking for sex. And some sociopaths like to exploit people just to entertain themselves. They have no real purpose. In fact, I have heard from many people who had online dating experiences where they met these people online and had this entire emotionally abusive relationship, but they never even met the person, or the person, you know, never took any money from them. So you never know exactly what a sociopath may be looking for, because their agenda shifts very quickly. And
is it a control issue ever, Donna?
Always. Sociopaths are into power and control. That is the main objective, and that's what they get their thrills from. They get their thrills from controlling people, and that's one of the reasons why they lie so much. I mean, because lying is a way to control somebody's perspective, and it actually, controls their mind in a certain way, because you're adjusting their reality by feeding false information. So that's one of the reasons why they lie so much. But, yes, it is totally all about control, Bonnie.
Now, let me ask your opinion on this. Do you feel that sociopaths, you know, in general, do they feel like they're victims?
They pretend that they're victims. They use the excuse that they're victims. I mean, they will certainly say that they're victims. And I guess maybe in their own twisted way, they do believe that they're victims. But mostly it's just a tactic. For a sociopath will always blame other people for anything that goes on in their lives. Nothing is ever their fault. If anything goes wrong, it's because somebody else screwed up or somebody else is out to get them. And they do a very, very convincing job of pretending to be the victim. And, you know, they fool a lot of people that way. They fool therapists. They fool courts. But often it's just an act.
Can a sociopath pass a lie detector test?
Some of them can, yes. And
because they really, do some of them really believe their own lies, Donna?
You know, it's hard to tell about that. I mean, I
mm-hmm.
tend to think not. I tend to think they know that they're lying, but I have heard of some experts who do tend to think that they kind of have this altered sense of reality. So I think that most of them do know that they're lying. I mean, one thing is for sure, they are not delusional. You know, they're not hearing voices. They're not psychotic, you know, like
right.
other people are. But because they are so entitled and they believe that they are entitled to whatever they want, whenever they want it, and however they want it, and they feel entitled to use any means possible to get what they want, and that includes lying. So they feel totally justified in lying. And one of the reasons that they can pass the lie detector test is because the lie detector test works by picking up on your physical symptoms of anxiety about lying, and
mm-hmm.
sociopaths don't do that. I mean, they have no anxiety at all about lying, so that's why they can pass the test.
Well, I think another reason, maybe you don't agree, but I feel that sometimes when people keep repeating a lie over and over, that they really do start believing that lie.
Well, there is research to show that when a lie is repeated over and over, everybody else believes it. I mean, that's certainly the case. And it's amazing that, you know, if you just keep saying something and if you keep saying it louder, then people tend to believe it. And, you know, it's interesting because we were talking before the show, Bonnie, and I was just at a conference of all the top researchers in psychopaths, and one of the presentations was done by a guy who studied the voice patterns and the speech patterns of the psychopaths. And what he found was that the reason they seem to be so convincing is because they jam a lot of words into their speech. In other words, they just say more. They just you know, put so many words in that people tend to believe them. So
uh-huh.
I thought that was a really interesting bit of research.
That is, you know, and I would
yeah.
like for you to maybe address a little bit when, and I always say this, when women meet men, you know, in any kind of relationship, most women, if a man started out on his first date by hitting her, she probably would never go back to him. That this isn't something that necessarily, these guys are smart. They don't necessarily start out being bad guys. They could start out being charming, wonderful guys. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sociopaths know that you get more with honey than vinegar. And
uh-huh.
That's exactly what they do. I call it calculated seduction. What they do when they're reeling somebody in or when they've targeted somebody is that they engage in something that we call love bombing. And what that means is that they shower the person with attention. They tell them how wonderful they are. They always want to be around this person. They're calling and texting and want to see them all the time. And so consequently, the target of all this affection, I mean, that would be you or me, we tend to think that this is fabulous.
Flattering,
I know that...
Right?
Oh gosh! I mean, you know, we're put up on a pedestal, and you know, we this person is just so overwhelmed with us, and wants to be with us all the time, and you know, it feels great. I mean, you know, it's a whole lot of attention. What happens is that a sociopath who becomes abusive, and you know, keep in mind that not all of them are physically abusive. I mean, there's an awful lot of psychological and emotional abuse that goes on. In fact, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why many people don't leave these relationships is because they haven't been hit. you know. I mean, they're falling apart psychologically, and they're emotional wreck, and they're depressed and anxious and everything else. But, you know, if the person doesn't hit them, they feel like, you know, they're not being abused, and it's a really bad misconception. So what happens is that a sociopath may, like, give a little shove, you know, or do something that's just a little bit physically abusive, not much. And it's kind of like they're testing the boundaries. They're seeing how much you will put up with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I talk about this, you know, when I talk to kids, college and high school students, you know, about love fraud. And the way I explain it is that they're training you to accept the abuse. You know, it's just like training a dog. If anybody has trained a dog, you know that, you know, you get the dog to sit for a couple seconds, and then you make it sit a little longer, and then you make it sit a little longer. Well, the same thing happens with this, is that they hit you, and then they may hit you a little harder, and then they hit you a little harder. And, of course, after each time, you know, they say, oh, I'm so sorry, it was a mistake, I didn't mean it, I'm having a bad day, or, you know. And so the target accepts this and accepts the apology, and then it keeps getting worse. So, I mean, abuse never, or very, very rarely, starts out like really bad right away. It's a gradual escalation that is usually what happens.
And Donna, I just, one of our listeners wrote in, if you could address this for her, and this is a question from Amy, who just loves listening to you. She said that she wants to understand the whole concept of why. She said, I was married in 1994 to a man who proclaimed to be straight. I did love him mainly as a best friend. The years of torment were so confusing to me emotionally, mentally, and physically. So, and my questions are many, but why do they marry in the first place? Why do we believe their every word? And why could we not see the writing on the walls? And why can't they come clean and let us go with honesty?
Oh, boy. Okay. Let's see. That'll take up the rest of the show. All right. Let's start with the first question. Why do we marry in the first
place?
Why do they marry? Okay. Is she talking about sociopaths or specifically
sociopaths.
Gay?
No, sociopaths.
All right. A couple reasons why they marry. First of all, if they're looking for financial gain, the best thing to do is, you know, become legally one unit. That means that your finances are tied together. Like, in fact, I remember a time with my ex-husband, I was getting, you know, really, really upset because he was running up my credit card bills. And at one point I said to him, you know, these debts are your responsibility because you paid, you spent all the money. And he goes, we're married. My debts are your debts. So, I mean, many sociopaths are very calculating about this. They know if they marry you, that you are financially responsible for everything that they do. So that's one thing. Now, another thing that happens is that many sociopaths want to marry in order to present a respectable image to the community, and their wife is actually cover so that they can go out and have their double life on the side. You know, and this is especially true of the sociopaths who are in the community, meaning that they're not arrested, and they may have jobs, they may have high-paying jobs. I've heard from many women who were involved with doctors and lawyers and corporate executives. Well, you know, somebody like that, you know, wants to have a respectable image in the community. And so that means a wife and kids and the house and the car and the dog. And in the meantime, you know, they're out, you know, looking for prostitutes or you know, perhaps this is the case in which they may be having the gay sex on the side. And so that's another thing that they want. They may want someone essentially to be a live-in housekeeper service provider. They want someone to cook for them. They want someone to do their laundry, you know. So there's all these different reasons, you know, besides money, that somebody, a sociopath, will want to marry. I think the cover is a big one, and it's probably a big one with your audience, is that, you know, they marry because so then they can, you know, do everything on the side and have those desires fulfilled, but still seem, you know, have their good place in the community.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they like
okay.
the respectability.
Yes, yes, yes. So, what was question number two?
Okay, the second question is, why do we believe their every word?
Ah, okay. Well.
And I think you could speak to that because you probably were in that situation, right?
Yes, yes. What happens is that sociopaths hijack the normal human bonding process. And I'll explain how that works. What happens is that when two people are beginning a relationship that eventually turns into a love relationship, you start to feel this bond to the other person. You start to feel an attachment. And what that means is that you want to be with the other person. Now, this forms in the very beginning of the relationship because of the pleasure that you feel. For example, you know, in the beginning of a relationship, you're all excited, you know, you've got the hots for this person, and the person is reciprocating. It looks like you're going to have this nice little romance going. Both people are doing things to please each other. They're on their best behavior. They're, you know, calling and everything like this. So all this pleasure creates the beginning of a bond. Then what happens is that if you experience intimacy, which can be any kind of intimacy. It's emotional intimacy, it's physical sharing, it's physical touching, and of course if you have sex, then you get the oxytocin system going. And oxytocin is a hormone that is released in the brain when you experience intimacy, and oxytocin makes you feel calm, trusting, and content, and it alleviates fear and anxiety. So you get all these, and plus there's the endorphins going, and dopamine
uh-huh.
and everything, so you got all these things going on in your brain that make you feel good, you know, because of this relationship. Then what happens is that the sociopath will introduce something that will create fear and anxiety. For example, he may threaten to leave the relationship, or may, you know, do something that upsets you, and then, of course, you want to get back to how wonderful it was in the beginning. So, you know, you, like, accommodate this person, and sometimes later on you start apologizing for things you didn't even do because you want to get back to how the relationship was in the beginning. Well, what's interesting about this process is that fear and anxiety actually strengthen the psychological bond that you feel. So then if you, like, kiss and make up afterwards, that strengthens it again. So what happens is that every single time you go around, it becomes this vicious cycle in which the bond keeps getting tighter and tighter and tighter. You know, first you have the attraction, then you have the oxytocin, and it tightens the bond. Then you have fear and anxiety, it tightens it some more. Then you get relief, and you kiss and make up, and that tightens it some more. So what happens is you want to believe what's being said to you, you know, because you want to hold on to this relationship. So when the person, like, apologizes for doing something bad to you, you want to believe that. And, you know, especially if you're in love with this person and you have this bond, you want to continue to believe that he is the person that you thought he was in the beginning.
Let me ask you this, Donna, because I find this happening a lot. You know, it certainly happened in my own relationship and, you know, with many of my women that I work with, is that, you know, in the beginning you kind of get set in on that romantic part of everything being beautiful in the beginning. And I feel that with a lot of these guys it's a slow deterioration, or sometimes it's quicker, of breaking you down and making you feel as if you're inadequate. And, you know, like you say, then you kiss and make up and it's a honeymoon period again. And then you're thinking, okay, well, I'll just work harder, try harder. But I think in a lot of cases, you know, the problem is that the women start internalizing the blame because these guys are pushing those buttons. Do you find that?
Absolutely. And, of course, the guy is also shifting the blame onto you.
That's
and
what I mean. Right.
Yes.
They're making it like it's your fault when
right.
things go wrong. They take
right.
you know, no matter what goes wrong, somehow it's your fault.
Right. And what that does is it taps into most people's sense of, like, anxiety. I mean, most people, you know, can start to feel anxious about a situation, and the sociopaths take advantage of that. And, you know, one of the things that sociopaths have about them that is so convincing is this energy of superiority. And in my book, I describe how they command, you know. In other words, they get things that they want because they command it that way. I mean, they will tell you, you're going to do this, and, you know, or if we're having a problem, it's your fault. And, you know, if you would just do what I want you to do, then everything would be fine. And, you know, it's your fault that I hit you because you push my buttons. And, you know, and they do. They, as you described, they gradually tear down the person, and, you know, the person continues to take it all in because I guess we're taught that way, you know. It's like, you know, we read too many self-help books about, you know, what you can do to improve your communication and all this other stuff. And so we do. We end up in these situations where we're getting ground into the dirt, and the other person is the one that's doing it to us.
Well, earlier I was having a discussion with a coach, you know, with a life coach, and I was saying to her, I think that with women, we're really socialized from the time that we're born, you know, to be, quote, good little girls. And good little girls are the ones that are always trying to nurture, take care of, solve the problems, you know, accept responsibility even when it's not their responsibility, because, you know, we get all those positive messages, oh, you're being a good girl, you know, when you do what everybody else wants you to do. And, you know,
yes,
it's very easy to buy into that pattern.
Yes.
And so you just become a people pleaser and take whatever is given to you. And if something does go wrong, you do internalize, well, I must be doing something wrong. And
yes,
it has nothing to do with you at all.
Right, right. And the other thing that happens is that sometimes women, and of course this happens to guys too, so we'll say the targets, whoever are the targets in a sociopathic relationship, sometimes they've had bad experiences in their youth or in their childhood. You know, perhaps they had parents, you know, who were abusive or demanding or something like that. And those types of behavior patterns get established as a survival mechanism, you know, because many kids who are in these relationships or who have parents who are abusive, you know, they learn to do everything that they can to keep their parent happy so that the parent doesn't lash out at them. And so, you know, this behavior pattern can be established at a young age, and then that's why people who had abusive childhood are so ripe and for being targeted by sociopaths, because they're used to that kind of treatment, because that's what they grew up with.
That brings me to the next question I'd like to ask you. I know there's some controversy on this, but how about nature versus nurture?
Actually, the controversy is pretty well resolved as far as sociopaths are concerned. In fact, there was a lot of discussion of this at that conference I was at just a couple of weeks ago. The consensus is that there is a very strong genetic link with sociopaths, in that a person can be born with a predisposition to become a sociopath, a genetic predisposition. But whether or not the disorder actually flourishes or takes hold in the person depends on the early environment. And that means the parenting that they receive and, you know, the type of environment that they grow up in, you know, whether it's a disadvantaged environment or an abusive environment or something along those lines. So the science is pretty well convinced that it starts out genetic, and then depending on what happens when the child is young is whether or not it will turn into a disorder. And, of course, sometimes the genetic, they call it an insult. The genetic insult is so strong. In other words, the person has such a strong genetic predisposition that it's almost guaranteed that the person, you know, will turn into a sociopath as well.
Well, I'm just curious, going along those lines, if it is a genetic predisposition, and I guess it's a predisposition because it's genetically from somebody who is a sociopath, wouldn't it go to reason that somehow that's going to be encouraged no matter who the person's? I mean, there must be some kind of that typical behavior if it is passed on from generation to generation. I mean, does it skip generations? Is it just a
predisposition? Oh, it can, sure. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, yes, I've spoken to people who were, you know, two normal parents, and they had a kid, you know, who you know, got the genes, and it can happen that way. I mean, there is a genetic crapshoot, you know, and it could be somewhere, you know, back further on the family tree, but usually if they look around at their relatives, they'll see that somebody else in the family, you know, has these characteristics. And what happens is that the children are essentially born fearless. I mean, that's one of the prime signals that you can see at a very young age, is that the child has, like, no fear. You know, they're not afraid of anything. And the other thing is that they don't seem to require a lot of attention from their parents. In other words, they're not looking for the parents' love the way other kids will. And
do they have a lack
of that,
emotional connections, do you think?
That's part of it, yes. And on a very basic level, it means that these children are not born with an inborn ability to love. It has to be taught to them. And they have to learn how to appreciate and enjoy being around their parents and other people. And that's why one of the most important things to do if someone has a child with a sociopath and suspects that the child may be at risk, because obviously if one parent is a sociopath, then they are at risk, it's very important to hold the child a lot and keep the child physically close to you and get them to learn to enjoy contact with other people, because they don't naturally crave it. So that's one of the most important things. And the research has shown that in raising these kids, what's important is parental warmth, you know, and how much love and affection and warmth you can give to this child. And sometimes this is really challenging, because these kids, you know, they could be a handful. I mean, you know, they get the terrible twos forever or something like that. And, you know, so it really takes a strong commitment, or it can take a strong commitment on the part of the parents to raise the child in order to not go down that road of disorder. And it's not easy, and sometimes it can't be done. But, you know,
do you think this is behavior modification can change this kind of behavior?
The evidence is that, yes. If you start at a young age and really work with a child, it can prevent the disorder from taking hold.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now,
let me ask
you this. All these kids who are doing bullying in the schools, would you consider them sociopaths?
Bullying is a sociopathic behavior. However, some kids grow out of it, and some don't. So, you know, that's a real tricky thing, because, like, one of the things is that, you know, when a kid is a teenager, I mean, any parent will say it's a sociopath, you know, because that's normal teenage behavior. So it's difficult to, I mean, that's one of the reasons why a lot of therapists who work with kids, you know, they don't want to label somebody as a sociopath, because a certain percentage of them do grow out of it, and but some of them don't, you know. And one of the things that I find in talking to high school kids is that, you know, this disorder really takes hold with puberty, and so many of them are really doing antisocial behavior, you know, by the time they're 13, 14, 15 years old. So.
Now, can you give me some examples in a teenager what to look for as far as antisocial behavior?
They lie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They manipulate. They will steal things. another trait, like the most important trait that gets studied is what they call this callous, unemotional behavior. And what that means is that the person can hurt other people or family members or friends and just feel nothing about it. You know, that they're very callous. They have no remorse. They, you know, bad and painful situations to anyone else just don't make an impression on them. In fact, that's what a lot of the research has done, is on these callous and emotional traits, and that's where a lot of the work is. And it, there is some possibility of turning kids away from that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm. So would you think that the people who get married who are sociopaths, in time, like, you don't think there's like a certain prototype of a woman they would look for? Because I usually tell women that if you don't have good high self-esteem, you're going to be inviting tragedy to come your way. Because I really do believe that a lot of these guys, you know, they have this sixth sense on who they can, you know, prey on. Because if a woman doesn't feel good about herself, you give her a lot of attention. She starts to feel, oh, somebody really loves me. And she's vulnerable to start with. And I think, you know, a lot of times men sense this, especially ones who want to, you know, prey on women. You don't think so?
Yeah, I think you're certainly right in many, many cases. However...
Not all cases, but I think...
Not
that,
all
you know,
cases.
Some, right.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you know, my colleague, Dr. Leanne Leadham, has done some research on this. And what she found out was that there are three traits that make a woman susceptible to being involved with a sociopath. The first one of them is extroversion, okay? This is someone, you know, who is energetic, who's aggressive, who, you know, is a go-getter. And this is kind of surprising. I mean, you wouldn't expect an extroverted person to be a target for a sociopath. But the reason that it often works out that way is because extroversion is something that this woman and a sociopath have in common. Now, for example, I mean, I was a successful business person, you know, when I met my ex-husband.
Uh-huh.
And what happens if someone's like a high-powered executive or an attorney or a doctor or any woman who's accomplished like that, many of us who've been in that situation have found that guys tend to be intimidated by someone who is, you know, maybe more accomplished than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And guess who's not intimidated? It's the sociopaths. So, I mean, the part of it is that, you know, these sociopaths simply have the self-confidence and self-centeredness, in a way, to feel that they're good enough to approach a high-powered woman. So that's one
reason.
That's
a good point.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, most guys, you know, like a high-powered woman looks at a less accomplished man kind of like a wimp, you know, and they want someone who's just as powerful as they are. And, you know,
and you know what, Don, let me ask your opinion on that. Because I know that when I was, you know, many years ago, when I was getting married, I was in a position of strength at that time. You know, I had a kind of high-profile job. And I considered myself to be a really strong woman. It required that of the job that I had. And so to me, I would look at a lot of men and I would just say, well, I don't want somebody who's weaker than me. I want somebody who I can lean on, someone who's stronger than me.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of times that we make that mistake of looking at strength, and it's really not going to be strength, it's bullying. But, you know, you don't recognize it at that time.
Right.
You're just looking for someone who can take care of you because you're a strong woman. You don't want a weak man, and I say that happened to me. Do you
yes.
feel that happened to you, too?
Yes, yes. You know, I mean, when my ex-husband showed up, I felt like this was the reason I was single all this time. I mean, here was this person who was this wonderful entrepreneur who had all these great plans. He was charismatic. He would, you know, had no problem talking to anybody, and you know, I felt like I finally found the person who was my equal.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he was a predator, you know, but I didn't
uh-huh.
know that at the time. So, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, I didn't have a problem with self-esteem, but I did have a vulnerability because, you know, I mean, we all have vulnerabilities, one vulnerability or another, and sociopaths just have this sixth sense to be able to figure out what your vulnerabilities are. They
mm-hmm.
figure out what you're looking for, and then they make themselves into that person. So that's one of the traits that tends to women, that puts them at risk of falling in love with a sociopath. Another one is cooperation. Women who get involved with sociopaths tend to be highly cooperative. They are willing to put their own interests aside and, you know, work for the greater good. This might be the greater good of their new family or their relationship or whatever. And so that's one of the things that makes women at risk. And the third thing is that women who are invested in relationships. These are women who are tenderhearted, who are, you know, like to give, who put other people first when necessary. So these are the three things that make women vulnerable.
Now, I don't know if you can answer this question, but, you know, this comes up a lot. I know that sociopaths, you know, it's definitely your expertise, but do you know much about narcissists?
Narcissists are like,
the
difference is narcissists are like junior sociopaths. They
sociopaths in training.
Something, well, sort of. All sociopaths are narcissists, and not all narcissists are sociopaths. The difference tends to be the amount of malice involved in the exploitation. A narcissist just kind of goes after what they want, and they want people to make them feel good, and they're kind of clueless about how their actions impact other people, whereas a sociopath often knows that they're harming someone else, and they don't have a problem doing that. So, yeah, they're very closely related, just that sociopaths are worse.
So somebody can actually be a sociopath and a narcissist, right?
Oh, yes. All sociopaths are narcissists.
Hmm.
Absolutely, yes.
So would you say that a narcissist can be someone who's also very controlling? In your experience?
Perhaps. You know, I mean, all these disorders are so interrelated that, you know, in the book that I wrote, I used the term sociopath as an umbrella term to cover not only sociopaths and psychopaths. Now, psychopaths and sociopaths are pretty much the same thing. You know, I mean, the experts will find technical differences, but I think from the point of view of a victim, it doesn't matter. It's like they're splitting hairs. And other related disorders are narcissism and borderline personality disorder. A lot of borderline personality disorder people, let me rephrase that, women tend to be diagnosed as borderline personality disorder far more often than men, and a lot of those women probably are actually sociopaths, but the therapist doesn't want to give that diagnosis to a woman. So there's a lot of overlap between all of these, and I think it's almost counterproductive. I mean, they're exploiters. These people are exploiters. Whether it's this shade of exploiter or that shade of exploiter, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, you just have to get the person out of your life.
Donna, I just had a question come in for you, and this is from Chicago, from Melanie. And she wants me to ask you, if sociopaths ever give up, or do they continue to torture their victims after the fact? In other words, you know, after the marriage is over, or after the relationship is over, are they still out to get you?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. It's a very common dilemma that after the marriage, the sociopath just doesn't want to let go. I mean, sometimes there are those who just abandon their former partners. I mean, that's what happened to me. You know, my ex just moved on and, you know, didn't look back. And there are others who don't want to give up control and, you know, are angry and enraged that their partner had the audacity to leave the relationship, or even if the sociopath is the one that left the relationship, the partner has the audacity to want to move on with her life, and they're not going to let it happen, you know? So, unfortunately, you know, sometimes they do continue to latch on. And that's why no contact is so important. I mean, the only effective way to deal with a sociopath is to not deal with them, is to do everything you can to have no contact with this individual. And, you know, sometimes, of course, if there's children involved, that's really difficult.
Right.
But that's the goal. And if you can't totally avoid contact with this person, you have to get to a spot that we call emotional no contact, meaning that you recognize what this person is, you know that this is their game, and you just have to accept that and not let it get to you. I mean, the thing to keep in mind is that a sociopath is always looking for a reaction. So you have to learn not to react, because if you react, you feed them. And, you know, so you can't fly into a rage. You can't, you know, tell them to, like, you know, why don't you just leave me alone or any of that stuff. You just have to be non-reactive, and then, you know, hopefully they'll get bored and move on.
Now, is this where you really need to set very strong boundaries?
Oh, yes. Boundaries are very important, and I mean, I hear from a lot of folks, you know, who have children and they're in, like, custody situations, and that's when it gets really difficult, you know, because a sociopath will do everything that they can to take advantage of the legal system, to continue filing claims and all this other stuff, and it can be really hard, but, you know,
so that happens to so many of our women, you know, my heart just goes out to them because, you know, these guys really come in. I'm not saying all of them by any stretch of the imagination. There's some really good guys out there who just made a mistake. You know, they were hoping against hope that things would work out, that those feelings would change. You know, they were naive also. But I always tell men, you don't have a choice in your sexuality. You do have a choice in being honest after you know what you're doing. But there are those men who I know are just such total sociopaths, and they just can't walk away. They have to sit and torture these women.
Yeah.
And will go to such extremes of, like you say, with the legal system, of trying to get everything, of filing for, you know, alimony. I mean, you went into a marriage, you screwed up the woman's life, all her hopes, her dreams, you're cheating on her, bringing home sexually transmitted diseases that'll ruin her in other ways for life, and now you want alimony. I mean, and they'll just keep going at it and looking for every legal way to sit and destroy this woman. You know, I just don't know what to tell these women except to emotionally devoid themselves of, you know, so hard to say it. You know, you get just so hung up in these, you know, breakups. And especially, like you said, when there's children and you can't just walk away. You know, you have to deal with these people.
Those are absolutely... Oh, God. You know, those are absolutely the worst cases. I mean, I hear from them all the time, and it's even more worse than good English is that. It's even worse when the sociopath is abusive, you know, because, I mean, abusive to the kids. And then, I was just at another conference about that, you know, the Battered Mothers Custody Conference, and the people, the abusers who engage in battering, you know, who batter their spouses, then, of course, they fight for the kids, not because they care about the kids, but because they know it's a control thing. They know it will hurt their former partner even more, and they don't want to pay child support. You know, so if they have the kids, then, you know, then what they usually call as the protective mom, or sometimes it's the father's, but, you know, the person who's not disordered often loses custody. I mean, it's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage because the sociopath will go into court, you know, they'll put on a good show. Oh, I'm
exactly.
Only concerned
and they're
about
so used
the best.
To doing that.
Yes.
You know, that's their whole persona, is to put on a good show. And don't you feel a lot of times, Donna, this is where a lot of our women really get upset. These guys are such great actors that the rest of the world thinks they're wonderful.
Yes, happens all
the
time.
I mean, they can put on such a great act that people think these are the most personable, charming, wonderful men. You're so lucky to be married to them. Do you find
that
too?
Oh, absolutely. And I have many, many people who are experiencing that, and it makes it so frustrating for the target, you know, the victim, because no one believes them. You know, I mean, you know, they're trying to say, you know, what's going on, you know, in their homes or whatever, and it's so difficult to overcome when this person is, you know, the life of the party and this neighbor who's, like, entertaining the kids or whatever's going on. And it's a very, very difficult thing. And the other thing that happens is that sociopaths will engage in what we call the smear campaign. And what that means is that even before they leave or when they suspect that their partner is going to leave, they start, you know, denigrating their reputation, and they start going to friends and family members and saying, you know, I really think she has some kind of a mental issue, or I'm really concerned, you know. And all of that is done often way in advance of, you know, when they actually leave, so that by the time the target, the woman, or sometimes it's the guy, because it, you know, works that way as well, by the time they leave and go to friends and family for support, nobody believes them. You know, they all think they're off their rockers.
That happens all the time with our women. These guys know how to garnish in, or to gather all the kinds of support they need. And I often tell women also that, you know, a lot of times they turn to their in-laws and they're not getting support because the in-laws side with their, you know, sons. And I say, look, you know, they're coming from families where you have problems to start with. You know, if you have a mother or a father who's a sociopath, they're not going to side with you. They're going to justify their son's behavior or misbehavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you can't expect you're always going to find support, you know, when it's coming from the same family.
Right, right. What usually needs to happen is that the woman in that situation needs to cut off contact not only with her former partner, but with his entire family. And often with any friends, you know, that may still be in contact with the sociopath, because, you know, especially when you're in the process of disengaging, you need to keep what your plans are very close to the vest. You know, you really can't be talking about getting out. I mean, because you never know who's going back and reporting to the sociopath. So you have to be very cautious about those conversations. And sometimes you need to be cautious about your own family, you know, because the sociopath is approaching your family and saying, you know, I really don't want us to break up, or, you know, I really want everything to be good, you know, and they're pumping people for information.
Oh, you're so right. And they do this. They prey on not only you, but then they prey on the family, because remember, a lot of family members can't see through them. You know, they act totally different around, you know, family members.
Yeah.
So a lot of the family members think these are good guys. Why are you walking away from them? And then the guys will tell them, well, I don't want to walk away. You know, she's acting funny. You know, she's accusing me of all these things. She's crazy. You know, they'll make up every reason in the world. I mean, it's just really sad.
Yeah.
So do you have any good tips on how to avoid sociopaths?
Yes. The first thing is to know that they exist. That's the main thing. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have called me after being in these situations and say, I had no idea that people like this existed. So that's number one, know that they exist. Number two is know the behaviors. I think we talked about when I was on your show the last time, the Red Flags of Love Fraud. That's my second book. It's called Red Flags of Love Fraud. And, you know, there are very specific behaviors that sociopaths engage in when they're in the process of seducing somebody. And we don't have time to go over them right now, but, you know, they're all on my website, which is lovefraud.com. And the third thing is to trust your instincts. One of the things that I found is that most people have a gut feeling or an intuition early in the relationship that something is wrong, that there's something wrong with this person, or there's something wrong with his behavior or her behavior, but we talk ourselves out of it. You know, we have this idea that, you know, oh, everybody deserves a chance. Everybody just wants to be loved. You know, there's a poor wounded
we
child
can fix
inside.
Them, right?
Yes,
and
yes,
we,
yes.
And we can fix these men.
Yes. We all are born with an intuition that is designed to protect us from predators. Okay? You know, this is like millions of years worth of human history is built into our brains, and the way it affects us is through our intuition or if we get a sense of fear. I mean, I've had some cases where people were absolutely terrified when they met this person, and then they talk themselves out of it. They say, oh, you know, you shouldn't have a reaction like that. How can you think something like that? You don't know anything about this person. Why are you so afraid? You know, this is stupid. And what you're getting is a hit, an intuition that this person is dangerous. So we need to learn how to pay attention when we get an intuitive message that something is wrong.
And I think that's the best thing, that don't keep trying to justify the misactions of the people that you're living with. That, you know, I know we all want to believe the best in people, but, you know, you can't be so blinded to the fact of the realities. I think we always think, you know, there's a problem there that we're supposed to be the ones to fix it. You can't fix these people.
No,
and that's not
and
your
that,
job. Your job
yes.
is not to have to fix them, right?
Right, right. This is the key concept. There is no rehabilitation for a sociopath. Once a sociopath is an adult, there's no counseling that's going to help them. You know, they're even if they stop hitting you, if they were physically abusive, it's never going to be a warm and loving relationship. You know, it's never going to get better. The only solution is to get out of it.
Well, Donna, I can't thank you enough for coming back on our show. And, of course, like you say, there's always so much more to talk about. But, first of all, women need to go to Donna's website, lovefraud.com, and take a good look at all the information that's available. Donna's books are on there, and they really are a roadmap to having success in your own personal lives. And also, there's just always great articles on there from Don and also from contributors to Donna's, you know, newsletters. And I always learn so much. You know, I look forward to them every week. I'm always learning something new from you, Donna.
And
great. I know that our women do, too. And maybe you'll do us the honor, maybe coming back again in the fall.
Okay.
And we can go over some of those tips, because I know that the more the people hear about you, not only, you know, during this week, but they always listen to the past broadcasts, the more women who become aware of you. And I am truly, truly in awe of you, and I appreciate so much the work that you do. And, you know, I just feel it makes such a difference for women to have this confirmation that it's not them, they're not crazy, that, you know, there are men out there who are going to just sit there and do this. They need to get out. So thank you so much for taking the time again, and we'll look forward to having you back here again.
Thank you, Bonnie.
And once again,
I appreciate
it's Donna
it.
Anderson, and also they can see you on YouTube, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Watch
yes,
your
we
videos
have videos
on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're one of the most articulate speakers. I love listening to your little, you know, lectures that when you go to the high schools, I watch that on YouTube, too. And, you know, you're just a wonderful speaker. You have it all going for you, and I just wish you all the best success. And whatever you need, I'm always here for you, too.
Oh, thank you so much, Bonnie. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank
it.
You, Donna. And to all our listeners, we'll be back here again next week. Thank you, Donna, and we'll look forward to having you back in the fall.
Thank you.
All right, have a great week. Good night, everybody.
All right.